A lot in the news these days about prevention health care, how it's important to keep you healthy. And that concept is now being used when it comes to your trees as well. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us. Our guest, Glenn Stanos, is a professor of tree and forest health in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. Great to have him with us. He's a certified arborist. We'll talk to Glenn about tree risk assessments and take a look at a number of tree diseases and their management. Glenn Stanos, welcome. Good to have you here.
Oh, thanks for the opportunity, Larry.
Oh, you know what? Just because Bob was and Franklin was waiting to talk with John, and John's not here anymore, I bet you, Bob, that Glenn... Oh, he went away. We lost Bob. He was talking about birch trees dead or dying and maples taking over. So we'll if he wants to call back, he can do that. We'll let him do that. Let's talk about tree risk assessment. What is it? How's it done?
Well, tree risk assessment is a relatively new formal process that was adopted by the International Society of Arboriculture about 7 years ago, and because trees are living organisms, they have the potential to fail. And when an arborist talks about failure, they mean some part of the tree may fall out of the tree or the tree may tip over. And prior to adoption of procedures or a standard process for assessing tree risk, many people could assess tree risk in sort of an arbitrary way based on their own expertise. But now we have a process, and certified arborists can take additional training and an exam and then perform tree risk assessments according to this formal process.
I was at a party looking at the owner's, one of his very large pines that looked to be in kind of bad shape. It was an old one, and he said he'd had an arborist come in and do a risk assessment. And he said he dug something into the tree, and then he told me that, you know, gave him some advice about the tree. What was he doing?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to know what was he doing in that particular case. There are ways to drill into trees to try to estimate the soundness or the amount of soundwood that might be in a tree.
He was doing that.
Right. So he was probably doing that. But I think what I should try to explain when an arborist who gets a tree risk assessment qualification examines a tree, what we're trying to come up with is an estimate of what we call the likelihood of failure. Is the tree or some part going to fail? And the next part is the likelihood of impact, meaning... is that part or tree going to strike an object that we call the target? That could be people, it could be property, it could
be house,
could be a street. and then we look at that combined likelihood of failure and impact, and we try to say, well, all right, now what are the consequences going to be? So when a tree falls in the middle of the arboretum and it's, you know, hundreds of yards from any path, the consequences are not real great. Yeah. However, if the tree fails and could strike your house or a valuable car, well, the consequences can be quite high, so that would be a higher risk tree.
We have lots of ways to assess risk, or?
Well, there's a lot of different things that are done in that risk assessment process.
Okay.
And one way we do it, we actually have adopted three levels of risk assessment. And the first level is a level one assessment, which I've done with a golf course superintendent, where we just rode in the cart down the fairways and give a quick examination of trees. And in the level one of assessment of a large population of trees like that on a golf course, we're really just looking for things that would leap out as being potentially dangerous. A level two assessment is the more common one, which requires examination of the tree from 360 degrees and looking from the crown to the trunk, looking to the base of the tree. And very simple tools are used in a level two assessment. like a trowel or a hammer. A lot of people are surprised to see an arborist bang on a tree with a hammer or a mallet, but you can tell a lot about a tree from that. And then a level three assessment is the highest level of assessment, and that actually might include boring into a tree or using a sonic device to get an image of the internal parts of the tree, or climbing up into the crown of the tree to get a better view of limbs. It'd be important if someone wants to have a risk assessment that they look at what level of assessment they're getting, and that helps them. That helps the arborist estimate risk, and then it helps the tree owner decide, well, how am I going to manage this risk? Because it's really the tree owner that makes a decision about managing the risk.
Yeah, whether or not that tree's got to come down, or maybe a branch comes off, or...
Sure, there's often options to just reduce the risk. And the whole system is devised to say, how many trees can we save, not how many trees can we remove. The idea is to keep the trees so that we can keep receiving the benefits of those trees.
Arland in Wyawega, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Arland.
Hi. I heard on public TV that there are male and female pine trees.
Well, in fact, pine trees are both male and female. So a single tree will have both the female flowers that develop into the cones, and they have also the male flowers on the same tree that will produce the pollen, and the female flowers get pollinated, and the product is the pine cone that we see. And interestingly, it takes 2 years for a pine to produce the pine cone that contains the seeds.
There you go. Thank you for calling. Jean in Baldwin, your turn. Hi, Jean.
Hi. We planted trees about 20 years ago, pines and hardwoods, and most of the hardwoods did not make it. And the pines, from when we first planted them and still today, will get like really slender in the middle, almost like a canker, I think, and then they just die. They just fall over and die.
Could I ask, are they eastern white pines? Is that the pine that you planted?
I'm not sure. We got them from a nursery, and we replanted and replanted, spent thousands of dollars replanting acres of trees, and finally just gave up.
Well, it'd be really hard to give you a particular diagnosis, you know, from a distance over the radio. But I would say you might, if these are forest trees, I'd contact the Wisconsin DNR and see if a forest health specialist from the Wisconsin DNR can actually do a site visit and visit those trees. If they're urban trees, you might start with county extension. That's kind of the standard, is to call your county extension and ask for advice. Or you might need to have an arborist who has some expertise in healthcare come and visit your property. But
why did you ask if they were eastern white pine?
Well, eastern white pines are five-needle pines. They have these long, soft five needles. So they're subject to a particular group of diseases, and white pine blister rust is one of those diseases that will form what we call a canker, and it's usually a sunken, narrow area on the stem. But our other pines, native pines in Wisconsin, are jack pine and red pine, are not subject to that disease. So that's one of the first questions that somebody trying to diagnose the disease would need to know, is what type of pine is it?
Yeah, so Gene may have had the wrong type of pine for the area that they have, for the land that they have.
Well, it could depend on, I'm sure Dr. Kotar, the last guest, was saying, you know, different trees have different site requirements, but also different trees are subject to different diseases.
So actually, an arborist would probably be helpful by going out and taking a look at the trees that are there, and also looking at the land a little bit, and have some suggestions about what to plant.
Sure. And then one other suggestion, if I could promote my colleague, Dr. Death, is send a picture to Dr. Huddleston at the Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic and see if you can get some help from a photograph.
That's a very good idea as well. Gene, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Glenn Stano is our guest today. He's a professor of tree and forest health in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology, and he'll be with us right up till 12:30 today. We're going to take a look at the news, the weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network, and then we'll be back with our guest, Glenn Stanos. You stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about tree diseases and how to keep your trees healthy on the show today with Glenn Stanos. Glenn is a professor of tree and forest health. He's in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at the UW-Madison. Really experienced in diseases affecting forest and landscape trees. He's a certified arborist, so he knows a lot. And, Glenn, we have Karen from Janesville who's been waiting a bit with a question, I bet. Karen, hi.
Hi. Absolutely love your show.
Thank you.
My husband's retired, and he's been interested for quite a while in what it would require to be a certified arborist. His undergraduate degree was at UW-Madison in soil science, and he worked briefly in that area and then got a master's degree and did other things, but he's a very conservation minded and is kind of kept up in that field, and would like to know what would it take to be a certified arborist.
Well, thanks for your question. That's a great question, and there's actually many paths to becoming a certified arborist. It's interesting that there's no legal definition of arborist, and sometimes we say it's too bad that anybody with a pickup truck and a chainsaw can call himself an arborist. It's not like some professions where there's a some type of legal requirement. But people become arborists either by starting to work for a tree care company and gaining experience over time, and then eventually saying, I want to become a certified arborist and joining the International Society of Arboriculture. In my background, I'm not a practicing arborist. I don't trim trees. I don't climb in trees. But you can gain experience through other kinds of life experiences or formal education. But to become a certified arborist, again, you take an exam from the International Society of Arboriculture. And Wisconsin has a great chapter, perhaps the best chapter in the country, the Wisconsin Arborists Association, and you can Google their website. I would say your husband should start by starting to attend some of the meetings of the Wisconsin Arborists Association. Yeah. Getting some additional information. You might want to contact a certified arborist that practices in the Janesville area and talk to them about whether they could start accompanying them and getting some knowledge. But the requirements for certified arborists, and I should be really explicit about that, there's a minimum requirement of work in the field. then you have to pass an exam that's quite a long exam, and even a professor like me had to study for quite a while to pass that exam. And then you take continuing education units and get credits, and you have to maintain your proficiency. So while there's no formal education requirement like a bachelor's from Madison or Stevens Point, you can work into the field. And then I should just briefly mention, or I'll be scolded by my colleagues at Mid-State Tech. Mid-State Tech has a program to train students to enter the field of arboriculture. Excellent program. And they're involved in a new state internship program where people can actually start working for an arborist and be paid and then take classroom training and go through this formal internship program. So many, many routes to become a certified arborist.
And where is Mid-State Tech?
Mid-State Tech is close to Stevens Point.
I'm not sure it's either
Stevens Point or Wisconsin Rapids, but it's very close in that part of the state. In fact, Mid-State Tech is now going to start housing students in the Stevens Point University of Wisconsin Stevens Point dorms, which is a big breakthrough for Mid-State Tech.
So there you go, Karen. Lots of good information there. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it very much. George in Glendale will give you a chance now. Hi, George.
Yes, good morning, or afternoon. Thank you for the call, taking my call. We've got a couple of, I believe, ash trees that are between 50 and 55 years old in our backyard. Over the weekend when there were some storms, a good chunk of one of the trees fell straight down from the tree and landed on our back lawn. I looked at the trees, and there's a lot of overhang of the over the roof and power lines and so forth. What's the next step? Do I call? We have a person that does our lawn and sort of trims some of the shrubs and hedges, or do I try and find a certified arborist in the Milwaukee area to examine the trees? What do you think would be the next step to do to protect the house and the roof and the power line?
Well, it's a timely call, and I, of course, am biased because I'm a certified arborist and a member of the Wisconsin Arborist Association, but I think that's your starting point. And so if you go to the Wisconsin Arborist Association website, if you just type in WAA and Arbor, you'll get to their website. And there are listing of certified arborists, and there's a great number that practice in the Milwaukee area. And you really do, at this point, need to have a professional look at the tree, particularly because they're ash trees, because we have, of course, emerald ash borer that jeopardizes the future of ash trees. So that arborist should be able to give you a reasonable estimate of what the situation is and whether those trees need to be removed. And I hate to say this, but with regard to a lot of defective trees, ash trees, trees that have already started to show failure, as your tree has if a limb dropped out, I often tell people, well, it's time to remove the liability and plant the growing asset. So you could be thinking about what the replacement might be.
There you go, George. And speaking of replacements, I think Sam in Edgerton has a question relating to that. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Larry. My wife and I bought a 10-acre property outside the Edgerton area about a year ago. We went through a house remodel, and throughout the winter, while redoing the house, we kind of took down a lot of the dead ash trees that were around the property. So basically, now we're left with no trees. And I was curious what your arborist had to say as far as getting a good mix of variety of trees put back on that property. I can take my answer off there. Thank you.
Well, it's unfortunate you lost all those ash. And replacement is a tough question. A lot of it depends on the type of soil that you have on that particular site, whether it's heavy soil, which I'm guessing
Edgerton probably is.
Yeah, pretty heavy soil. But I have to tell people right now that I'm a pretty big fan of our oaks. Despite the fact that there are diseases of oaks, Oaks are tough trees. They can withstand a lot of, well, obviously they can withstand high winds. They can withstand a lot of climatic difficulties. They can withstand drought to some extent. And so I'd be a proponent of planting some oaks at least, both red oaks and white oaks, not all of one kind. I bet your soil could also handle maples, and if you have the space, and this would depend on how much space you have available, I might even say that you'd consider, if it's a moist area, that you'd consider some maples. We like to see hickories around because with climate change coming, hickory is a species that we expect to see more of as the oak hickory forest from south of Wisconsin starts to migrate into Wisconsin. I'm a big fan of mixing things up with conifers, and I love eastern white pine, and you can probably get away with planting eastern white pine. I've got them in my yard in Middleton, and they're doing phenomenally. One thing you might do is go to the UW Hort website. Laura Joel, the horticulturist who's been Larry's guest many times, she'll have a whole list of different trees that you might want to consider for your property.
For your area, but those were all really good suggestions, Glenn, I think. We have Deb in Franklin with something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Deb.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My husband and I have an ash tree in our front yard, and it's approximately 20 years old. It's been doing very well. It hasn't come to emerald ash borer, but it was hit by lightning approximately 2 months ago, which caused the bark to burn off on the east side of the tree from approximately the ground level to 10 feet up. And I'm just wondering, is the tree going to die, or is there something we can do to prevent it from dying?
Well, ash tree struck by lightning. I guess I sometimes have to tell people, aren't you lucky? Because
yeah.
You got to observe one of nature's phenomenon. And trees are great conductors of electricity. So when they're struck by lightning, you often see this stripe down the side where the electricity has traveled down into the ground. Typically, trees struck by lightning, if they were healthy when they were struck, they will often survive. They'll have a long scar on that side of the tree. Decay fungi often will then enter through that tissue that's been exposed. So in the long term, it's probably not good for the tree, but it probably won't die in the short term. So I'd say you might enjoy it. But again, this might be one of those cases where you'd think about, well, what might be the next tree that I want to have in that spot should I need to remove the ash, either from EAB or the eventual demise due to other fungi attacking it.
Would something like a lightning strike, would that, and you've got the emerald ash borer out there, would the emerald ash borer be more likely to affect a tree that's been somehow damaged, lightning or wind or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
As is the case with some other types of tree diseases?
Well, that's a good question, Larry, but I have to defer to the entomologists. I don't know if the lightning-struck tree would be more prone to be attacked by EAB or not. I know we have so much EAB in the area, though, that when I look at ash trees, I always say, well, it's not a time of if, it's just when.
When, unless you are interested in spending some money on prevention.
Right. So this might be one of those cases, depending on the location of the tree and whether it might eventually cause some risk in terms of property damage, you might consider about, well, what should the next tree be there? And maybe you invest in growing the asset.
Get another one started.
Right.
Get another one started, Deb. All right. Thank you for calling. Richard in River Falls, on to you now.
I'm here.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Well, in my backyard, I live within the city. I have a 30-year-old white oak, positive ID, a white oak that's about 35 feet tall. My question is that it had total leaf out this spring. But this summer, I've about 1/2 to 2/3 of its leaves have turned dry and are dropping off. And for the first time in my recollection, there are some spots, not spots, but some a little bit of bark loss on the tree. And so otherwise, it's been a very healthy tree for me, but I'm just wondering if all of a sudden I have oak wilt. And I'm especially curious because I thought that that this kind of oak was resistant to oak wilt. My primary question is, even if it loses most of its leaves, should I give it one more year to see if it comes back, or is this definitive enough so that I need to consider taking it down?
Do you have other oaks, by the way, on the property?
I do, but the nearest one is approximately 80 feet away, and it's a very healthy white oak.
Okay.
Well, in particular, because your tree is a white oak, yes, it has some resistance, or the white oak group has some resistance to the white oak fungus. And so in your case, I would definitely say retain the tree and don't bring anyone in who might want to remove the tree. There are other diseases of oak that will cause leaf loss. Anthracnose is a category of leaf diseases, and white oaks in particularly wet years. And geez, I don't know, Larry, have we had a wet year this year?
I think so.
So your tree could be suffering from anthracnose, and that's will cause leaf loss, but it won't be lethal to the tree. So a white oak, I'd say retain that tree. You don't need to do anything in particular to care for it, except if it would be anthracnose. That is a fungus. The leaf fungus overwinters on the fallen leaves. You want to do good cleanup and make sure you get all those leaves burned or buried or removed from the site. And let's hope that it leaves out next year. If you had a red oak, it'd be more urgent for you to get a diagnosis. Again, using the University Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, and because red oaks, it can be lethal in a year, is typically lethal in a year for red oak. Interestingly, with increasing storms that we seem to be having, we think we're seeing more and more oak wilt because any branch breakage, the broken branch is the infection court where little knitted doolid beetles, those are beetles we call picnic beetles, will deposit spores. So it's one of the side effects of these increasing storms that we think we're seeing more oak wilt because we think we're seeing more branch breakage and the natural spread of the oak wilt fungus.
I remember having someone on the show once talking about that beetle, and they did a little test where they had a tree just to see how long it would take for one of those beetles to get there. And it was like under a minute. I think it was really, really fast.
Yeah, it's amazing how sensitive the antennae of insects are to chemicals. They're chemoreceptors, and those beetles will find fresh wounds on oaks very quickly. So I guess the most important point, if I could make it for people to remember about oak wilt, is that pruning wounds caused by arborists pruning trees or homeowners pruning trees are also an infection court where the beetles are attracted and deposit the spores. We have a general rule of thumb in the arboricultural trade that we don't do any kind of work except clearing storm damage, of course. But we don't do any kind of work on oak trees until the middle of the fall. Good arborists will be scheduling work now that they will do in October, November, December. And my rule of thumb is you don't prune oak trees until the Vikings are eliminated from the playoffs. And that's about, you know, October, November, and then we're good.
There you go. Oh, thank you so much. Kendra in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Kendra.
Hi there. The city of Milwaukee planted a maple tree in front of our house maybe 5 years ago, and I have just noticed on the mature leaves that, like, they're turning yellow and you can see, like, the green veins, you know, the vessels in the leaves. It seems to start at the tips of the branches and move backwards. And I'm not sure what it is.
Well, I have to say you're lucky you live in the city of Milwaukee with one of the finest urban forestry programs in the country. And I grew up in Milwaukee, and I think that Milwaukee, the city, and the county with their parks are one of the reasons why I got interested in trees. And you're lucky to live in a city that has the trees that Milwaukee has. It sounds as though your maple tree may have what we would call chlorosis, and chlorosis is just a symptom. If the leaves are yellow, are more yellow than they should be, it's usually from a deficiency of take-up of iron and manganese. And that often happens in our southern, southeastern Wisconsin soils because we have a relatively high pH, meaning the soils are somewhat alkaline. And so it's harder for trees to take up that iron and manganese that they need. But being in Milwaukee, I'd say call the city forestry department and let them know that you're concerned about the tree and ask for one of the urban foresters to stop by and take a look. It's typically not something that would be treated. If the longer the tree is established, the more likely that symptom will disappear because it'll have a larger root area and be able to obtain more nutrients from the soil. But call your good Milwaukee City Forestry Department.
And they, since it's they planted it and it's on city property, they're pretty much more than happy to come out.
Well, it's their tree.
It's their tree.
You may love it, but it's their tree.
So there you go, Kendra. Thank you very much for calling. Stella in Sturgeon Bay, question from you.
Hi. I am wondering if either red, white, or an unknown oak would thrive in the tree lawn between the sidewalk and the street where it would be subject to getting snow kicked up with salt during the winter.
Road salt.
Road salt. That's a perennial Wisconsin question. Oaks are not highly sensitive. They're not as sensitive as some other trees to road salt. So I would say oak could be a good choice for you there. I don't have the list in front of me, but there are whole lists of trees that are more or less tolerant. And maybe if you'd send an email, I could get you that information. If you look at UW-Madison's website, you can find my email address, or I don't know, Larry, can I give it out?
If you give it out quickly.
Okay. G Stanos, so G as in golf, and then Stanos, my last name, STANOSZ, at wisc.edu. And I'll get you more detailed information.
And Glenn, will you come back and be with us again? Love to have you back.
Sure, sure. I'm getting ready to retire, and I'd like to visit more often.
All right, Glenn Stanos, our guest, professor of tree and forest health in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. We'll get him back and do it again with him. In the meantime, stay with us. I'm Larry Mealer.